Welcome to Command Control Power, a weekly podcast hosted by three certified members of the Apple Consultants Network, drawing from over 30 years combined experience. We talk shop, interview vendors and colleagues, and share what we've learned while operating our technology consulting practices. This is Joe Saponari of CIMAC, and my two co-hosts are Sam Valencia of the HCS Technology Group and Jerry Zygmunt of MacWorks. We are live at commandcontrolpower.com, the first Tuesday of every month, where new episodes are posted weekly. Thanks for listening.
This episode of Command Control Power is sponsored by Watchman Monitoring. Watchman Monitoring is your gateway to managed services.
Today I was in class, and as it so happens, when I'm in the middle of things at class is when things break down for my clients typically.
Of course.
Right. But thankfully, I mean, I do have a small team I can work with, so I can shove everything to Matt, really. He's my team. So today I get a call from a client, which I couldn't pick up, and then subsequently I receive an email. Now, this is actually a Windows-based client, but what actually happened was she told me, how did she word it? She said, no one can access the server. So I'm like, okay, could be a network issue. Maybe I can hop on remotely. Now, what you have to understand about this particular client is they don't have a lot of usable cache, let's say. So although this might not be the best practice, I'll start with saying that she actually works on the workstation that shares the files to the other users. So in effect, she is the server. So I said, okay, well, we can check that out. And she said, well, I can't access the server either. So I'm thinking, well, that ain't right. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, I can understand if someone from the network can't access it, maybe the share's down or something. So I get in remotely, I use TeamViewer, and they have a separate volume for their server data. It's separate from the OS. So I go to look and I click on the D drive in Windows, and it says, this is raw data, it needs to be formatted. Oh. That doesn't look too good. At this point, I have a couple students that are doing exercises. So I'm being quiet and kind of doing this remotely. And I'm thinking, okay, let me just take a breath for a second and think this isn't the worst thing in the world. I left the room. I said, you have to excuse me for a second. I left the room and I called her and I said, you know, it's kind of interesting. I didn't want to alarm her just yet, right? So I'm trying to figure out how to word it delicately before she starts freaking out. I'm like, did you happen to see, I don't know, any kind of wording on your screen that said format and you clicked it? Oh, man. That was the most delicate way I could put it. And she goes, well, I was on the phone with Seagate support because, and get this, the worst part about this was their external hard drive that they were backing up to was showing signs of failure. So I said, listen, for, you know, at least as a stopgap for like $60, we can buy a 1 terabyte at Staples until we, you know, look at a solution that's good for you. Or even if you're running low on cash, we can use that. So for $60, they could have had a replacement, but they decided to call Seagate and see what they could do about it. And Seagate support, in their infinite wisdom, decided to blindly walk the user through how to format the drive to see if that would help. Oh my God. Now, I've heard of, you know, remoting in or starting a remote session with the end user to try and work that through. But this person thought, oh, I could walk this user through that. That shouldn't be an issue. I said, tell me what happened during that conversation. And she said, we tried to format it and it didn't work. And he said, yeah, that drive is hosed, so we'll send you out a new one. I'm like, okay, that story didn't sound right to me. So I said, I don't want to alarm you, but you seem to have formatted the data with all the volume with all of your server data on it. She's just dead silent on the other end. And she said, you know, the director's going to kill me. This is not good. I said, okay, listen, there's a reason why we have multiple methods of backup. We do have a cloud-based backup solution. It's not going to be the fastest thing in the world, but we can start a restore process through CrashPlan. Let me go take a look and I'll call you back. So I took a look. Thank God, verified CrashPlan was up to date and running to the minute since it last backed up, which was like less than an hour ago. So I called her back and I said, look, I see all your data. CrashPlan is there. She's like, oh, great. I was about to throw up for like the last 15 minutes. And I said, all right, it's going to be fine. Just we're going to restore. Lesson learned. Now is not the time to be hard on her. You know what I mean? Sure. Obviously, we're going to have a sit down and discuss what shouldn't be done and the severity of clicking that format button. We started the restore process. It's a couple hundred gigs and it was like operating at 5 megabits per second. So looks like it's going to take about 3 days. She said, well, that's that's okay. I mean, I'll deal with whatever you can do for me, blah, blah, blah. I'm just so thankful. This is awesome. Thank you so much. So she was very happy, but I was talking to you guys about this. I thought maybe I'd see if CrashPlan, if we sent a drive, could locally restore the data and then I could get the drive back. But now I'm kind of figuring, you know, 3 days, if I get them anything and they copy that data and then bring it over to me in 3 days via FedEx, even overnight, it's kind of not worth it. I'm just going to suffer through the 5 megabits per second download speeds that CrashPlan limits. Seems to be a Windows client limitation, not like people were reporting that Linux clients work better in this fashion, but I have the data restoring. I'm watching it as we speak. You know, at least they're in decent shape, which is says a lot for having multiple backups. I mean, think of the horrific story this could have been if she just had the one backup and then formatted her server data when trying to fix that backup drive, you know?
So you don't have to comment on this, Sam, but this client that you're describing to us, if you're a regular listener of the show, they might sound vaguely familiar, like we've heard about them before, but I don't want you to say yes or no.
But blink once for yes.
But hearing you tell this story, believe me, let me preface this by saying I would feel exactly the same way, but you really seem really connected or emotionally connected to this situation. Sometimes when you hear it as an outsider, and Joe might feel the same way, it's really easy to distance yourself and feel indifferent about it. It's like, well, they should have called you and they didn't. So yeah, kind of thing. But you sound sorry for them. And I feel for you because I know I would probably feel the same way. But why do you feel sorry for them?
This particular client, I have had some dealings with outside of the office. They have some events for their foundation and things like that I've been invited to. And we've spent time socially as well. So whatever ups and downs we go through as a client to consultant relationship, I do have that personal connection. Not that I wouldn't for others, though. I mean, of course, there are some of those clients that you just have friction with or you just don't get along personality-wise.
Right.
But I think a lot of times, especially in situations, I can empathize with them when I feel like they're just in such pain, unless they really didn't take my advice and purposely followed another direction. My feeling sorry for them only goes so far at that point, because then I'm thinking, I told you so. I do feel a connection with a lot of my clients in that way, just a personal level if they feel so horrible for what's happened, you know?
And you do have a time and materials relationship with them, right? You're not the first call person when they're having technical issues. It sounds like they try to do stuff on their own in an effort to save money. Is that correct?
That does happen. And it's one of those situations also where a family member of one of the people that works there likes to help out. Mm-hmm. So that always, and I'm sure any one of us have dealt with situations like that, that always causes a little bit of a difficulty. Although this person really just, at this point, I think we've gotten to the point in the relationship where I said, it's okay for advice and I'm happy to have those conversations, but just don't touch anything. And I'm fine with that. If you want to share advice with someone and they want to relay that to me and I can just shoot down their wild theories, that's okay. But as long as you're not touching what I already did, I'm okay with a little bit of open discussion at that point.
Mm-hmm. This is Billy the intern who's really good with computers.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, this is like my client's, you know, self-directed email domain name change. The intern, you know, let's put this big project on the intern and just see what happens. You know, it's a good test.
What could go wrong? Right.
And then we'll call our, you know, trusted advisors like later. That's my impression is like it seems to be a pattern, you know, in certain cases where like this client, as you described, Sam, they try something first and then they call you. But then again, I can sympathize too. I mean, they, you know, it's not like they went in and said like, let me just see what happens if I click format. They'd said, okay, the backup's not working. If we call our guy, it's going to be like at least a multiple of whatever per hour. So, you know, is there anything else we can do? And somebody was like, oh, it's made by Seagate. Let's call them, you know, and then see. And, you know, you pretty soon you're into a big mess. You know, it's like it's not hard to see how you could get in like on that path, though. Right.
Yeah, it's easy to go down. I mean, I guess she thought it was harmless. Who knows? She didn't seem to understand the severity of the word format either. Like she's like, what did I do? And I mean, to us, it's like, duh, right? But I don't know if that maybe doesn't make sense to that person, you know?
Right.
But it is, you do get a big glaring alert that says, warning, all your data will be erased. And I think when you get that, it would make me pause to say, am I doing this on the right drive? You know, I mean, I have a lot of paranoia about that even as a professional. am I doing this on the right drive? I've sometimes canceled and stepped back again and then took a second look because I'm a little concerned about maybe I'm punchy, I'm tired or whatever.
Right.
So, you know, but she didn't see that. And I mean, I did feel kind of bad for her, even though, you know, they got themselves into their own jam.
That's a good tip, though, Sam. It's our pro tip of the week. When you're doing clones, you're using Carbon Copy Cloner and you've done it so many times. I do that as well. I take a step back and sometimes I'll name the target something dramatically different from the source, and then I can always rename it later just to make sure. And sometimes I'll give it that very distinct, unique name, and then I'll quit out of Carbon Copy Cloner and then double click on the drive that's mounted on the desktop and make sure that that's indeed the one that I need to be my source or be my target.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would agree with that approach wholeheartedly, man.
Yeah. Check and recheck. Measure twice, cut once kind of thing. Measure twice, check twice, clone once. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, and also it speaks to, like, we were talking recently about the, switching up the procedure. Like, if you've always done it one way for years, you know, it's easy to start to get habitual about it. We talked about Sam's debacle with putting the drive in and then trying to clone. And Sam, I don't want to be up about that. I know.
Seriously?
No, because I think it was very illustrative to like some of the listeners, perhaps. Like, where, you know, clearly the better procedure, as everyone now has discovered, clone first and then you install the drive once you've got, like, now you've got two copies of the data, if at all possible. But if you've always done it the other way and now you think, well, that's a bright idea, let me start doing it that way, you know. And if you just are very habitual about, like, which is the source and which is the destination, now you've just kind of reversed it, you know, and you've got to, like, maybe check thrice.
And I was talking about the Valencia technique about gluing the displays. I last week I mentioned that. I want to rename it. I want to call it the Valencia maneuver. I think that has more distinction to it.
Nice.
Yeah, that sounds better. I agree.
You're going to get royalties on that.
Nice. Excellent.
Wow, Sam, that is quite a debacle, though. I did have one today, similar, like, where offsite backup saves a day. Brand new client. I'm going there today to set up a time capsule. They didn't have, you know, anything backed up. They thought, they thought one of them was probably backed up by Backblaze. I thought, well, that's good. I recommend Backblaze. It's kind of always a surprise when clients use the thing that we already recommend, you know, and they haven't stumbled into some, like, horribly marketed, you know, like, knockoff thing, Zip Cloud or whatever.
Jimmy Drive. Right. I just made that up.
Yeah, I'm sure it's out there. I'm sure it's one of those Mac Keeper, you know, follow-alongs or whatever. So, this client, I get there and, you know, we're walking around. It's like my first time there, brand new client. We're going to set up this new time capsule she ordered. And we're walking around and there's this iMac sitting on the desk at the top of the stairs. And I'm seeing, as we walk up to it, the screen was on, gray screen, blinking question mark. I'm like, oh. And she's like, oh, no one ever uses that. I'm like, it looks like it's having some trouble, you know? And she's like, oh yeah, no, really. Like, we don't even turn it on. And I'm like, it's good, 'cause it's not going to, you know? And she's like, well, it has all our photos on it. And, I hired somebody last year and it was this big, like, ordeal and a lot of money and and blah, blah, blah. And I got my photos on there and I'm thinking, oh God, you know, I hope, like, and so I boot to our Sci tool and the drive doesn't even show up. It's not on the SATA bus, you know, it's not mounting, it's not recognized. And it's just, I suspect it's totally dead. It's this 2012 27-inch iMac. I think it's probably just got a standard hard drive in there. I guess it's the 27-inch, so it'd be a 3.5-inch drive, but it seems to have failed outright. And she says, well, that it should be backed up by Backblaze. And I'm thinking, I'm really crossing my fingers, because when people say something's backed up, it's usually not. I mean, I hate to be, like, pessimistic and cynical, but it's just, a lot of times they're like, oh, it's all backed up to whatever. And it's like, it's just not, you know, the drive is in the drawer, the service, the card, you know, they changed the credit card number 3 years ago or whatever. So, right.
And they tell you it's backed up and they open the drawer and they take out a thumb drive. Right. Yeah, this is what we used to back it up.
That's exactly what this client did, Jerry, honestly, to be totally honest with you. On the MacBook Pro, I'm like, it looks like there's a drive configured, you know, it's this one is set to back up to, you know, to via Time Machine, and she probably took out a thumb drive. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's not big enough. There's a chance, but I'm pretty sure that's not there, you know. And sure enough, it wasn't. Anyway, I mean, you know, I hate to beat up a client, but it's all the same. I mean, it's very hard for them to keep track of, like, what's what, and this is why they hire us for managed services, to keep track of this stuff. It's a 50-50 shot. I mean, on the plus side, it is Backblaze, so there's some hope there. Because usually if it's, like, Carbonite, or I don't know why, but I've just, 9 times out of 10, they're like, it's backed up by Carbonite, and I'm looking at, like, a red icon in the menu bar, and it's like, it's paused because they haven't updated the credit card, or you know, or it's a new computer or whatever, it hasn't been backed up in like 2 years or something, you know, and they're ignoring the message, you know how it goes. And so sure enough, I help her log in. She gets the password on the first try. We log into Backblaze and it's like, your iMac was backed up 78 days ago. I'm like, well, that's probably when it died, you know. We ordered the drive. Backblaze has this option. It's really easy. You just go in. It's like $189. In this case, it was relatively little data, but I thought, let's just order the drive. This is the only place this data exists right now, as far as I know. That was really lucky. But, you know, that's another example, Sam, of offsite backup saved the day in that case.
Heck yeah, man. It really proves our point and drives it home to the client. This is why you're paying for this extra service.
And it's so inexpensive. There's no excuse why any of our clients shouldn't do it.
Yeah, especially Backblaze. I've been trying to convince my own offsite backup clients. I have people paying me to back up their data to our server, you know, using CrashPlan, our locally hosted Pro E server or whatever. I'm honestly trying to move many of them over to Backblaze. I don't really want to maintain that anymore. I don't want to compete with $5 a month. It's just not, like, it's not worth it. I'd rather have somebody else handle that. I can make sure it's backed up using, you know, Watchman will monitor that, so I can still keep an eye on it for them. So, well, that's I hope that works out, Sam. It sounds like you have every reason to believe it will, and you save the day. And hopefully the client, do you think there's any, like, relationship repairing coming about? Like, are they going to, I mean, maybe it's a budget thing, but do you think they're going to, anything's going to change?
You know, we pulled the curtain out and then showed that this was a client that I've dealt with in the past that we had some issues with. That client, in the past few weeks, actually did issue an apology to me. Just for everyone's benefit, we had an issue way back when with an Office 365 migration with them that didn't go exactly smoothly because we weren't involved since the beginning. They sent me an email apology, actually, which was really nice to see. It's kind of on us, you know, let's work together, let's figure it out, and thanks for all your help. So that came about before this issue, that the whole Seagate problem, which now they're even more thankful to me for. Yeah. So I think all is good on that end, on the relationship end.
Short of saving their firstborn from a burning building or something, like, there's not a whole lot more you could do, like, to, you know, prove your worth to this client as a trusted consultant. I hope edict comes down from on high. Like, nobody do anything. Call Sam.
It sounds a little bit, I mean, you're being too nice. This sounds like an abusive relationship.
Jerry, you're so skeptical. I knew that would happen.
It really does.
I was waiting for that.
Just like, you know, they mess up again. It's like the bad kid, you know, he's your kid, you know, and he just crashed the car and then his friends and he, you know, got into trouble and you had to go down to the police station and they didn't arrest him, but talk to the officer behind the desk, take him home. You got to have a sit down and say, look, we can make things better. We can make things better for you. We can make things better for me, because this is not a good way for us to continue on. I think that's an important conversation that I think you really need to have. We've talked a few weeks ago about these not-for-profits. I think their intentions are sincere, and I don't think they're trying to take advantage of you, but this is very often the way they do business, is they say, you know, we can't afford this. And I think you have to say, look, you can't afford to have these things keep on happening to you. That's what you can't afford.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think the relationship's been around for a long time, and we hit this particular rough patch, but I don't think it hasn't been this way the entire time. And
Sam, we'll this see is an intervention. Yeah. Okay, let's lay it all on the line. Jerry, it's time to just you know what? Lay it all.
I'm taking a break from this damn show. Screw you guys, because first you're getting on me for the IMAX story and now this.
Sam, you said you'd say
I'm taking
that.
A hiatus. I'm out.
People can change. It just does take a lot of effort sometimes, and you know, I think that this can happen over time. I've had some client relationships we've had to repair. I think a lot of times it comes down to, like, the people that are working there sometimes at a client, and sometimes they insulate you from the powers that be, or sometimes they try to take matters into their own hands. Sometimes people try to, like, prove their own value in the company and, like, oh, I can handle this, I can save the company money and I'll be the hero. And then they, you know, they screw it up, and then, like, still, you know, unless you, like, rat them out to their boss kind of thing, like, it still doesn't become clear. Like, we try to be very careful walking that line and being very, like, diplomatic and stuff, and not, you know, not throw people under the bus. And it sometimes it just, it can take years for it to go in a direction where, like, don't respect what you have to offer, and then it can take years to then earn back that respect. But this is probably the perfect case to to do that. So I think, you know, my approach would be, not that you asked, was like the data, you know, you got the data back. Like Jerry said, it's kind of like a perfect time for a sit down, you know, like, listen, guys, I didn't want to beat you up. Like when you're in the midst of like potential loss of, let me remind you, potential loss of the data, all of the data of the company, or however you want to put it. You don't want to like make that person look even worse, but I don't know how you say it, but like you try to make it known that this was like a really bad situation. They already know what it could have been. You know, you can't continue to engage with them if it's going to, if this kind of thing is going to happen. But I don't know. I mean, that's just my unsolicited advice.
Do you want Joe and I to come with you?
I feel like I'm in IT rehab right now. thank you for the group session, guys. I do think we will have a sit down anyway, though. In all seriousness, after this, forget it. I'm due to go in there anyway next week. And just to bring this story full circle, one of the big things that I think I felt for a while, which I mentioned on a previous show, was that I felt a little bit of guilt for not personally attending to them for a while because I got busy and I sent somebody else. And there was some personal feelings of guilt there. And I think that's why I let a few things, didn't get too pissed off at them when things weren't accurately or correctly, I should say, handled. We're going to sit down. I mean, I'm going there in person, which I haven't done in a while. So we'll spend some time. We'll open a bottle of scotch and we'll chat it out.
Is this the sushi client, Sam?
No, that guy's awesome.
Okay. All right. I thought there had to be something redeeming this whole thing. Jerry, do you have any theories about which of Sam's like, you know, gold star clients this might be as far as like what the
I wouldn't call was? This a gold star client.
I think if this weren't a not-for-profit, he wouldn't be in this position right now. He would be laying the smack down. You know, that's the unfortunate position that we all might find ourselves, and listeners of the show might be. Sometimes we work for these institutions that are doing very fine work, and you just have to separate what's business and what's not business.
You guys did give me that therapy session last time, so I'm not paying for the same thing twice here.
Well, you got to make some progress, Sam. You know, then we can progress to the next level of therapy. Honestly, I don't know if I'd be in any different position. I totally feel for you. I've been in these similar situations. I totally know where you're coming from, where if it wasn't you and you have this like little bit of background guilt, like maybe I should have been the one, you know, maybe I'm neglecting the client. I know I'm not. I know they're in good hands, but still, like, I should have been there myself. Like, I've totally been there. And, you know, and you always wonder, like, even, I mean, I trust my team implicitly, but you always wonder, like, what, I don't know, like, would things have been different? Would like the client's response to me have been different? Would things have gone differently just for that reason? You know, and you just wonder. So, and you cut them slack where you maybe shouldn't. You know, you cut the client extra slack because you figure, like, well, let me just, you know, it's like almost like you need to go through it yourself before you really are going to like draw the line or something, you know?
Yeah, daddy hasn't been home lately, so I'm going to let Jimmy off the hook, even though we smashed the Porsche. We're going to let him off the hook. You know, he deleted all the data on the drive, but, you know, daddy hasn't been visiting in a while, so I see it all, you know? I can
see it all.
I see where you're coming from. I'm not like as anti nonprofits, I think, as you're kind of implying. There can be a certain like poverty mentality with nonprofits. You know, they operate on this like, well, we're doing such good work that like we just can't spare any money for like trivial things like, you know, supporting our technology. Like that doesn't go toward our mission or something. And I don't know who your client is. I'm not speaking to them, but I've just seen that kind of thing before. But I have to say, I've seen the opposite from other nonprofits where they do have the budget and they do get the you know, they understand like that you need to invest in professional services just to do their work. You know, it's all part of it.
Can be a slippery slope. And sometimes you go into these organizations and the tech is just all over the place. You know, you're looking for the Mac Mini server and it's piled up underneath a whole bunch of magazines. You know, it's not getting any airflow at all. And it's like somewhere buried under a pile of papers and stuff like that. And you're pulling up big globs of dust. You know, this is their air quotes server. And they're wondering why they can't log in.
I don't know if you can really extrapolate that to all nonprofits, though, Jerry. Right? I mean, in all fairness, I mean, I'm with you on the, you know, so there is definitely a personality type for some nonprofits, but the magazine piles on top of the Mac Mini server. I don't know if you can really, you know, necessarily, but yeah, I've seen the type.
I've got a client in mind that
I figured.
Yeah, there's got to be someone he's picturing. Well, you know, since I'm out of the hardware game, not making money there, I got to keep these nonprofits.
Yeah, really. Clearly, they're you know, bringing in the big bucks there for you. So,
are we officially off the rails with this episode of Command Control Power?
Yeah. Well,
that happened a long time ago.
Because so I'm looking at the show notes that we're keeping for this show, and it's the page is absolutely blank.
Sam, I'll leave that to you to fill in your nonprofit tales of woe.
I'll put in their URL for the show notes.
Nice. Yeah, exactly. Their website. Yeah, give generously. They can really use it.
So we'd like to talk a little bit about our longtime sponsor of Command Control Power, and that is Watchman Monitoring. If you're an Apple consultant and you're looking for a fundamental tool to start your business, this is the one asset that you want to have in hand and have in your tool belt to start your own consultancy. Watchman Monitoring is a fantastic piece of software. It's a lightweight client that you put on your client machines. It can monitor your server software. So you're running a Daylight server or a Cario server. It monitors and checks backup operations. It makes sure your client machines are backing up. So whether you're running CrashPlan, Carbon Copy Cloner, Backblaze, Watchman Monitoring monitors them all. It checks your client disk drives, RAID systems. It looks for slow network performance. It looks for problems with the system performance of a machine. And you get all these immediate notifications by email when any of your client machines are exhibiting problems. It checks for malware. It's absolutely fantastic.
So just to give a little something to the longtime subscribers of Watchman, because I think most of us are, many of us are anyway, and if you're not, you should definitely check them out at watchmanmonitoring.com/command control power. There are some things you should know as a Watchman user. First of all, a new idea had come to me when I was presenting some of my managed services contracts, specifically to a new client. So I've had a couple of cases recently where a client will approach me, a potential new client, and they're interested in working with us, and they're actually looking for something like managed services. It's kind of difficult for me. I don't have a lot of experience writing those contracts and presenting that to a client to figure out how to write the contract. And I realized that, like, step one is I kind of just need like a litmus test for their entire stable of Macs. It just occurred to me, why not install Watchman Monitoring as step one? Even though this client is not yet on the books, we don't yet have a relationship with them, or maybe we're just doing a little bit of project work, we can install Watchman Monitoring on all of their computers. And that's like a really quick way to do basic discovery of all the machines on their network. You know, you get a nice report of all the machines, serial numbers, specifications, how much RAM is installed, what OS level they're on, and you can just right away see some red flags. And not to mention, you can also immediately give a client an understanding of your benefit, your value, by saying you have 5 machines with malware, you have, you know, 3 machines that probably could use a memory upgrade, and there's like 6 machines that we won't even support because you're running an OS that's way too old. You know, step one is to get these up to date, add RAM, maybe replace these drives with SSDs, and you can easily recap this whole thing just from Watchman Monitoring. So, I mean, you can send a link to your client to the Watchman Monitoring installer, just have the end users install it, and it's going to report back to you automatically. You can review that list with your client and say, here's the number of machines I have. These are the users. Is there anybody we're missing? And then you can just summarize that right from the report that you can export right from your dashboard on Watchman Monitoring.
One of the nice things about Watchman Monitoring, too, is they're always adding features. So it's not like you just simply subscribe to the service and that delivery of content that they give you remains the same. They're always upgrading and improving the product, and you still pay the same price. One of the nice things that you had mentioned before, Joe, is when you go into these machine profiles, if you identify a machine that potentially needs upgrades right from the client device profile, you can click a link which will bring you directly to OWC's page. This is Other World Computing or MacSales.com. You have all the information you need, the correct RAM that needs to go into this machine, the correct hard drive, any upgrades that you need to do. You can be directed directly from the machine profile through Watchman to Other World Computing.
Yeah, it's such a no-brainer. I mean, you know, we all know kind of in the back of our minds, so I think this machine uses, you know, 1600 megahertz DDR3 memory or whatever, but you don't need to like double check it or look up the serial number or do anything like that. You literally just click View Upgrades button on the computer overview, and you'll see a page with the specific RAM, the SSDs that qualify, even like in a laptop, the batteries that you can replace the original battery with if you need a new one, including, you know, OWC's kits to replace the SSDs. If you don't have as much experience doing this, it comes with the adapter to put the drive in for data transfer. I mean, it just makes it so easy just to get a link to the exact parts that qualify for this machine. So I think they've done a really good job integrating that. And it's just a great way to add more value to your managed services offering. So I highly recommend Watchman Monitoring. And as we said at the ACES conference, Watchman Monitoring is your gateway to managed services.
To take some heat off of Sam and his tales of woe and potential data loss and heroic saving of data, I wanted to talk a little bit about a recent troubleshooting experience I had here on the bench at CIMAC, as I sometimes do. This was a client who came in with a bare drive, 2.5-inch drive, that she purchased from Apple that had failed in her iMac. And Apple had installed a new hard drive, clean installed Sierra on it. She kind of implied that that a person at Apple kind of went above and beyond to some extent, sort of, to like recover some of the data on his own time. It wasn't really clear what the backstory was there exactly, but basically the person had tried to help by copying some of the data or providing some of the data on an external drive or something. But she started to realize if it wasn't a complete restoration, she'd be missing things like, what about sticky notes? You know, that was a specific thing she referred to. And I thought, that's a good point. You know, that's like stored behind the scenes, I think, in the user library folder. It was very interesting to me because she was sort of proving my point. Like, I often make the point with clients, we really recommend doing a full migration or like a full recovery and restoration or whatever the case may be. You know, you might say, all I care about is my photos. And then I might say, like, what about your contacts? Well, of course I want my contacts. Well, you know, and then you go down the list. What about your passwords? Oh, yeah, that would be nice. You know, what about, and so on, you know, preferences and settings and apps that you had installed and just, I mean, any number of things that you'd have to reconfigure from scratch. So we've debated this on the show, whether to do a clean install and like manual migration or, you know, to do a normal sort of standard migration using Migration Assistant or restoration from backup or whatever. And in my opinion, it's generally preferred to do a full migration whenever possible. And she was going down this list saying like, and then I thought about, you know, what about the software that I had and so on. And she's proving my point as to why it's better to just go with the full migration. So that's when she called us, was when she realized that she was kind of in over her head trying to do it piecemeal with this thing from Apple. And she brought us everything and said, just, you know, if you can get me back up and running, that'd be great. So I thought, this is a no-brainer. We do this every week. So we connected the 2.5-inch drive to an adapter and used Disk Warrior to rebuild the directory. We previewed the replacement directory, and then we used Carbon Copy Cloner to clone the you know, now mounted preview of the disk to like a temporary holding location. It was entirely successful, with the exception of like one file. I forget even which file it was. Some inconsequential thing. Part of a movie that she had, you know, edited in iMovie or something like that. Something that looked like it would have been rebuilt. So great, you know, great success so far. So we then switched gears. We had this iMac, you know, booted to Sierra that Apple had installed. And we said, let's just like move aside it's like user account that they created and migrate, you know, just do a whole hog migration, including the old user account, which had the same name as the one that Apple had kind of temporarily created, you know, replace the existing user and just do a full migration. So we did that. We get to the end. The message was the migration was successful. You know, you click on, I forget if it was quit or restart at that point. The system rebooted and it booted up and it got to, you know, the progress bar goes across the screen. It's a black background, you know, white or whatever, gray Apple logo and the progress bar. And it gets to like, it's about to show the login window and it flashes very briefly, like a split second. You almost would miss it if you weren't looking, and goes to black screen. And then you see the spinning gear. And then it reboots. And it's like, okay, so let's just see if it, you know, maybe this boot is the charm. Nope, same thing. So if you leave it sitting there on the bench, it's just gonna keep rebooting. It's gonna show the progress bar. It's gonna get to like right before the login window, very brief login window for a split second, and then reboot and repeat. So I try everything. I try, safe boot, just real quick. That's a simple thing to try. No success there. I try resetting the SMC, resetting the NVRAM. Basic stuff, no luck. I try reinstalling the OS, no luck. Then I start to dive into software. I'm thinking, okay, maybe it's something that was restored in the migration in launch agents, launch daemons, you know, on the system level, the root library level.
Login window plist, you whack that?
I was waiting for that.
I did, because that's okay. You know, that worked for me a few weeks ago. with another system, and or at least got me somewhere, you know. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's a likely scenario because it's like just about to display the login window, or it does briefly. And I thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe something with that. No, I tried all that, didn't work. You know, there was some old software. I usually look at dates in launch agents and launch daemons, 2010, you know, stuff. I'm thinking this, she's probably not using this flip cam anymore, you know, and so I'm just deleting some stuff, and nothing's having any. I reboot every time, you know. Let's see if that did it. No. Let's see if that did it. No. So just continuing to troubleshoot, not making any progress. I'm ready to give up. I'm thinking, like, I've reinstalled the OS. I've done everything. I really just can't figure it out. I mean, it was booting to the temporary user Apple made, you know, up until we restored from the backup. So, or restored from our clone that we made. So what, you know, what did we bring back from that would be having this problem, that would be, you know, causing this? She wasn't complaining prior to this about the system, like, doing anything weird. It was working until the drive failed. You know, it had directory corruption or something, but the drive had failed. So finally, I think there's one other location where I've seen weird stuff. And we all know about /var/db/.apple-setup-done. So in fact, I thought to myself, let me see if this is a user level thing. Like, let me reset this back to, let me just try to create a new user. You know, I remove that file, and it comes up to the setup assistant. Select a language. You continue. You know, select English, unless you want to have some fun and try a different language. But you select English, and you go forward, and it actually then at that point goes back to select the language. So it's not going to, like, the setup assistant to create a new user. So that's weird. I'm thinking, like, then I look into the rest of the files in /var/db/, you know, I'm looking at alongside .apple-setup-done. Have you guys ever heard of .apple-upgrade or .apple-launch-migration?
I have, but I'm waiting to hear what you have on this story, but I just saw it the other day.
So I may have had this a little bit out of order, because actually that was the thing. I actually went in there and I thought, what are these funny little files? I haven't seen these before. I don't know if they're Sierra specific or... Actually, the .apple upgrade, if users do a search on our site, they'll find a Bash show where I've talked about Apple upgrade file. And so I tried that one first, and that did not, you know, solve it. I removed .apple launch migration and restarted, and boom, I get to the login window. I see two users listed. I see their pictures. I see their names. Everything. I'm like, okay, I solved it. I'm, you know, celebrating and talking amongst my staff, like, oh, this is a heroic move, and look at this. And and then I go to just, like, you know, well, let me just log into the user now. This will be easy, smooth sailing, piece of cake. Well, as you might be able to imagine, it was not a piece of cake at that point. It didn't accept the user's password. And I'm thinking, well, she might have, you know, not remembered the password. Fine. You know, let me see if it's really it. I go back and forth with the user. Let me reset the password. So that's actually when I went and removed the .apple-setup-done file. That's when I found that I was not able to bring up the setup assistant, didn't actually get the opportunity to create a new admin. So I think, well, okay, let's use the reset password utility on the recovery partition. So I went in and did that. I selected the user. It sees the users. It lets me choose a new password. In fact, in her case, she was using her iCloud password as her login password. So it prompts for her iCloud password. I put it in. Great. It accepts it. It asks me for a new password for the user. Put that in. Restart. Okay. I'm hopeful now, right? I put in the password I just selected, and it's not accepting it. Reboot. Her husband's account's on there. His is not using iCloud. I think this is a little different anyway. Let's try this. Reset his password. Can't log into his account either. So I got to the login window, but I'm not able to actually authenticate as any users. And I, you know, not able to create a new admin user. I thought, well, let's, you know, can I use, what do you call it, Discl or DSCL, right? To try to, like, you know, I don't know what I was going to do. Reset a password, or, which I already did, delete a user. You know, I was thinking I could maybe create a new admin manually. At that point, I was able to successfully delete one of the users, and I'm in over my head because I just can't log in, so I can't really do anything else. So I punted. I had to reformat the hard drive. I then reinstalled Sierra from the recovery partition. I migrated everything from the clone that we had made, with the exception of users. And that was successful. The machine rebooted, no problem.
Wait a minute, you migrated. You didn't use migration
I
utility.
Did. I used Migration Assistant, and I selected everything except for users. So I did that figuring, okay, I was hopeful that, you know, not only would it not migrate the actual individual users, but it wouldn't migrate any like possibly corrupt, you know, data from the user accounts database. Because that was my theory at that point. I'm thinking, well, I can't, you know, resetting the password doesn't allow me to authenticate, can't get the setup assistant to load to create a new admin user. Maybe it's a user account database issue or whatever. And so I, you know, didn't migrate the users. Successful migration. I then manually copied the two user home folders from the clone to the internal drive, created the user accounts with the old passwords, reclaiming the existing folders that I just cloned or, you know, manually copied in the Finder. You know, successfully logged in as a user, no problems whatsoever, rebooted, no problem, problem solved.
How long did that take you?
Days upon days. You know, this was one of these, like, hey, it should be ready tomorrow. And then, like, wait a minute, the migration finished, but, like, you know, I've never seen that before. First of all, the failure to bring up the login window, the reboot cycle, I've never seen a machine just repeatedly reboot like that.
That's really bizarre.
Yeah.
Let me ask the $10,000 question that I always ask. So how do you charge for something like that?
I knew you were going to ask that. Well,
are they nonprofit?
Yeah. No, but I feel like a nonprofit after going through that. Yeah, because I mean, this was one of these things where it's like client comes in and says, here's the scenario. And I'm like, great, we do this every day. You know, no problem. I estimate 1 to 2 hours. And you know, it was much longer than that. But here's what I did. I showed 3 hours on the invoice minus 1 hour courtesy discount. I capped it at the 2 hours I estimated. And I told her, you know, this was a lot more involved. It took like a week turnaround, you know, to do all those steps throughout. The first couple of days of which were like, you know, as expected. It's like, you know, you need a full day, like overnight, basically the day she brought in overnight to do the initial clone. And then like another, you know, kind of like the rest of the next day to do the migration. You know how it goes. And a couple of days go by and you're thinking, okay, I'm just about done. Multiple more days of, well, that didn't work. I don't know where to go from here. Finally, at the end, I ended up having to redo it anyway. But I was thinking, I like to invest the time in hopes that I will solve the problem and learn something and save myself and everybody else a lot of time next time, you know? But so it's worth it to some extent. But in this case, it turned into like, I just made it work and I charged her for what I had, you know, planned. I probably could have said, listen, this was a lot more involved. You know, we got to the same end result as promised, but I'm going to have to charge you something.
So would you say it was unsolvable, right? There's just some things that got to throw up your hands and say,
yeah,
let's make it work and move on because we can't keep on screwing around with this. I mean, this can't be your life's work.
Right. I mean, right. Exactly. How many more days, you know, could I afford to troubleshoot? I mean, you know, here's where like, if I had been more involved in the Slack, or if I had more resources at my disposal to call on some, you know, who's the expert in Diskl or whatever, you know, who's the directory services, yeah, right?
Command line utility. Yeah.
Yeah. So I, you know, is there like a Diskl expert, you know, that could help me? Here's what I thought. Can I just clobber the user accounts database? Like literally just rip it out, whatever that means, like reset it to factory default. So there's no user accounts and I remove the Apple setup done file and, you know, hopefully I'm able to create an admin and then just create the two new users and reclaim the existing home folders.
Right.
You know, that maybe, but then, you know, then I think to myself, well, I could spend a lot of time doing that. And the system is still unstable. Like there's still some underlying issue that I didn't quite get at the root of. So.
Wow, that's rough. Yeah, exactly. You don't know how deep this rabbit hole goes. So you could do that and it could work for a while and then it can go back to bite you. Good work, Joe.
Yikes. Yeah, that sounds like a rough week. And you know, you felt bad and billed the 2 hours, but I don't know. That's tough.
Don't you feel bad complaining about that cracked screen now, Sam?
No, I do not.
I find with these kinds of things sometimes too, there's some waiting involved where I'm just like, my subconscious is working on it, you know, where it's like, I might go a day and I haven't like sunk my teeth back into it, you know, and I haven't dived back in to figure out, you know, I'm just not actively troubleshooting, but I'm like, I'll wait half a day and be like, you know, is anything going to come to me? Like what, thinking about with new eyes, you know, so I don't know.
Yeah, you were coined by myself a couple of shows ago, Tenacious Joe. And once again, you know, you're like a dog with a bone. You just won't give it up.
Well, yeah. I learned something. I mean, that, like, so Sam, you said you had seen these files, this Apple upgrade and Apple. The one that was new to me was Apple Launch Migration. There's Apple. There's also Apple Install Type, Apple Diagnostics Setup Done. These were all the files that were in that location.
Oh, that's a lot. Yeah, no. What I was going to say is Apple Upgrade I had heard of. The others, no, I have not.
Sierra Install that had come from Apple. Again, it's a case where it's like, I don't know the backstory. I had to assume it was like just a very simple, clean install of Sierra. And for all I know, these were brought back from the clone that I made. You know, maybe they were on her drive. Maybe she had tried to fix something before the drive failed outright. And these files got kind of like left behind. And then I restored them essentially from, you know, by cloning. Or I didn't actually clone, I migrated. So you'd think that the migration assistant would be smart enough not to bring over these little empty files. But,
well, I mean, they got to do something just like Apple Setup Done. I mean, I'm looking at a Sierra computer right now and I see those files on it as well. I mean, it, similar to Apple Setup Done, they have to have a role, don't you think? I mean, I just don't know what all of them do.
Well, you know, the weird thing too, I don't know if this is just a weird way I'm not Googling correctly, but if you search for this stuff, most of this stuff, you find Apple Setup Done. Everybody knows about that trick.
But yeah, right.
I had no results for, well, I had like one result for Launch Migration, I think, you know, like one like actual reference, couple other little, it turns up like less than a page of Google results basically. So it's not documented very well out there.
We're too early into Sierra to figure it out yet. We gotta wait for some other guinea pigs to come across this.
Right. There was also something in library launch daemons, and it was com.apple.installer.osmessagetracing.plist. So I'm like, what is this thing, right? So I look in there, and it looks like it's referring to it's I don't know. I don't know how to read these. Basically, I'm just trying to read it. It's like launch only once, and it's launching. System library, private frameworks, OS installer framework, resources, OS message tracer, right? That's the path. And then username is root, group name wheel. And then it says watch paths. And it's a string. And it says var db.appledeignosticssetupdone. So I don't know what that means. I think it means that like it's loading this framework to watch, you know, and telling it to watch this location and see if this file exists or something. But that was there too. So that's another clue that it's like maybe she had tried to reinstall and then it just crashed or something right before the whole system crashed. But just really weird stuff. I feel like I'm reading the tea leaves here a little bit.
I think just the fact that you had such a tough time with this and that there's not a lot out there, and certainly Jerry and I aren't helping you either about what this could mean. And like Jerry said, I mean, you kind of considered a bit of a lost cause. You got it resolved for her one way or another, but the answer still eludes you, right? So that's frustrating.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks again to Watchman Monitoring for sponsoring this week's Command Control Power. And check out Watchman Monitoring at watchmanmonitoring.com/Command Control Power.
What's Disney Circle?
They call it Circle with Disney, which I just think is a really weird name. There's a device. All right. Should we talk about it or?
No. Just tell me what it is.
All right. There's a device.
No, please don't.
There's a device called Circle with Disney. I don't understand
the
name.
What do you mean a device?
It's a piece of hardware. It's a piece of hardware. Actually, you know what's funny is Gruber is they're a sponsor of Gruber now of the talk show. I heard it
in a
recent episode. It's a filter.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, for families.
Yeah, for families. Yeah.
Got it. You've got input on that?
Yeah. I can just tell briefly.
All right, riff away. This goes in the show. All of this, even the lead-in.
Okay. Right. So, Circle with Disney. There's a thing called Circle with Disney. And I don't understand the naming convention. It's a circle, and it's with Disney. And it's not a circle. It's like a rounded rectangle, like a rounded square.
Oh man!
It's called the circle, and it's with Disney. It has Disney inside. I don't get it. Anyway, it's called Circle with Disney. Client first mentioned this to me like a couple months ago probably, and said, this is a client who's like kind of up on like what the state of the art and web filtering stuff is. She's trying to like stay one step ahead of her teenage son. And we're just like, you know, we're like at a loss. We're like, I don't know, kids are too smart these days. Like we don't have a great recommendation on this. We'll recommend something like OpenDNS, you know, web filtering. We'll recommend TeenSafe, and then TeenSafe stops working with the latest iOS or whatever. And then, you know, we recommend QStudio. We've talked about these on the show, and they all kind of work to some extent, and then the kids figure out a way around it or whatever. So just to interject,
this is an appliance, or this is something you could plug into your home network. And I'm on the webpage now. It's basically meetcircle.com, and you can get it at Target, Best Buy, Amazon, B&H. So it's a device. Right. All right, continue.
And it's a device with Disney. So I'm hung up on that. I don't get it. So it's a circle with Disney, but it's really a square. And it's anyway. So you plug this thing into your network.
You got to give that part up, man.
I got to give it up. I got to let go.
It's a circle, but it's a square.
The whole concept is just really weird. I'm just confused about it. But a different client said to me, you know, we want to try to filter our webs, you know, keep our kids from going to inappropriate sites. And we have this thing called Circle with Disney. You know, is that the best thing? Are there other options and whatever? So I said, I've heard that's pretty good. You know, I haven't really used it yet. Just full disclosure, like we can try and work on it together. So I get there and he had already set it up, you know, supposedly. And he's like, I don't know if I did it right. I don't know if it's working and whatever. And I look at it and I'm like, yeah, no, I'm pretty sure it's not working right because it's just plugged into power. It's this little like square. It's like smaller than an airport express. And it's about the same shape and stuff like that. Again, it's not a circle. Did I mention that? And and it's plugged into like a little micro USB cable, like plugged into some, you know, power adapter. Like that's how it's powered up. And it's got a light on it. But I'm pretty sure it's not doing anything. I'm like, I don't think it's set up. I mean, it didn't help that first he points me to this Lutron thing for his lighting. And he's like, this is the circle here. I'm like, that's not the circle. It's not only is it not a circle, but it's not the circle. It's the wrong thing. And so then he shows me, maybe this is the circle. I'm like, oh yeah, that is the circle, but I'm pretty sure it's not set up. It's got an Ethernet port on it, and it's not plugged into anything. And I'm thinking like, how could it possibly filter web traffic if it's just connected by Wi-Fi? Like what, you know, I thought what I'd be walking into is something that plugs in like between the modem and the router, you know?
Sure.
Or something like that. I mean, I don't know how. That's my assumption. So I look at it and I'm thinking, yeah, well, we'll look at it together. So at the end of the appointment, you know, we did some other stuff and then we circle back to the circle. And he has the app already installed on his phone. We look it up. Sure enough, it can talk to the circle device. And, you know, it shows and we go in and it shows a list of all the devices on the network. You know, including my iPhone, you know, all of his Macs and everything. So I'm like, okay, no, it actually looks like it's set up. Let's try to use it, I guess. So you can go in and you can create a profile and that like, so you know, let's say you create a profile for the son, call him Jimmy, you know, and you can select from the known devices that this circle device can detect on the network. You select among those devices and you say, all these are, you know, this is Jimmy's iPhone and Jimmy's Mac and whatever. And you add them to that profile. And then in that profile, you can say, you know, these are the time limits. These are the, you know, bedtime is at this time. You can say like, and then you can get very finely grained filtering of like based on content. So you can say like he's allowed to, I didn't look at it in detail, but, you know, like gaming websites versus violence versus pornography, you know, whatever. Like there's this, it's probably two dozen like little on-off switches. You can like very finely grained, you know, control this. There's also a big pause button. So you can just go in and like, you know, if the kid's misbehaving or something, you just tap on pause. And so we're testing it. And again, this device is plugged into power and that's it. So we're on the kid's MacBook to test it. We're loading a page, you know, yahoo.com. Okay, great. We tap on the pause button. We click a link and it's like, your device is paused. What? How did it do that? I don't get it, you know? And so it works. It seems to work really well. I'm sort of baffled. The only thing I can think of is maybe it uses like UPnP to tell the router forward DNS requests to the circle and then the circle responds. Cause if it's paused, you're actually at something like, you know, pause.circlewithdisney.com or whatever. I forget what the actual address is, but it redirects you to like a different address.
It says in their document that it talks to the internet automatically via Wi-Fi, and then it poses as a gateway because it's using ARP spoofing or ARP poisoning.
ARP poisoning. Okay. I still don't understand it, but that's okay. So, wow.
That's how it's doing it.
I'm curious about this, though. I want to learn more about it.
I mean, doesn't it seem weird that you can just walk into somewhere and like configure a thing to just break the whole network? You know?
Well, they say this is typically used as a black hat device.
That's
so some guy can walk into Starbucks, you know, they'll have something similar that'll do ARP spoofing or ARP poisoning and just completely get access or get traffic from everybody else's computer.
Interesting. I mean, I've heard of that. I honestly don't know what it is, but now I know that it's a type of attack in which a malicious actor sends falsified ARP, that's address resolution protocol, messages over a local area network. This results in the linking of an attacker's MAC address with the IP address of a legitimate computer or server on the network. Right. I still don't get it. I don't know.
That's awesome.
I think the square thing threw you.
Yeah, it was that actually definitely threw Joe. He's right. Pretty upset about that.
If the appliance was actually fully round, he would be a lot better at this.
Well, it's kind of brilliant when you think about it. If the kid tries to load some pornography and the thing says, circle with Disney has blocked you, the kid's like looking around for a circular-shaped device and just can't find it. And he's like, I don't know.
That's right. So,
you know.
Whacking the Lutron device with a hammer.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The lighting goes out, but, you know, Yeah, it's funny. Well, the other thing that I thought was pretty interesting about it, so it can apparently be configured. We didn't test this, but it can be configured to detect a device that joins the network, alert you when a new device joins the network. It can alert you when the device itself is unplugged. So, you know, the kid might, like, find the circle and unplug it. Well, it's going to tell you about that, and then, you know, you presumably, like, whatever, you do something, you unplug the internet or something like that. Or the kid, you know, brings in an iPhone that he got from a friend or something, and a new device has joined the network. So now you can filter that one too. You know, you can do something about it.
No, absolutely. I've been getting a lot more requests from families about stuff like this. So I'm absolutely going to look into it more. It's just, it's curious how you stumbled upon it though, right? I mean, you find this square circle device and you're all bent out of shape about it, but it turns out that it actually works pretty well.
Right. Just geometry, Joe. Just geometry.
I can't wrap my head around it.